Let me welcome you all to Parshas Shalach this year, 5767. And although a lot of you have the spies on your mind, I am trying to be faithful to our topic and our approach this year of conversations with Hashem. Actually, the opening line is also a conversation with Hashem, but I had my eye on a longer conversation, which is really a classic. We have found throughout the Torah that once in a while there's a longer give and take, back and forth, between Hashem and Moshe. It's fascinating. Or Hashem and Avraham, or Hashem and Yaakov. And a few of the weeks we have been able to listen in, so to speak, and see what they're talking about. Well, in this parsha, in the aftermath of the episode with the spies, we have another classic conversation. This time, the conversation is expanded by the Midrash and by some commentary and by the Talmud, which I'm going to quote to you. So what we're really going to do is we're going to be studying a few verses, maybe about five or six verses or seven, and the additional elucidation by these outside sources from the oral tradition, and listen in to a fascinating conversation. The episode of the spies itself is well known to many, to most in the room, I'm sure, that the Jewish people, before entering the land, pressured Moshe and Hashem to allow them to see the land first. And as a result, 12 spies were chosen and sent to the land. 10 out of the 12 came back with a disheartening report, which caused the Jewish people to lose faith and to complain and to really express, they cried, as the sages say, the Torah says, and as a result of that, the decree was made that they would not be able to enter into the land of Israel until it was the time for the next generation. But before that decree was made, Hashem actually had proposed a more severe decree, and that is what we are going to listen in on this conversation. This is chapter 14, beginning with verse 11. It starts on page 804, 805 in the English, and let us listen to this conversation between Moshe and Hashem. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, ad ona yinatsuni ha'am hazeh, v'ad ona lo yaminu vi, v'chol ha'osos asher asisi bekirbo. Hashem said to Moshe, how long will this people provoke me? And how long will they not have faith in me, despite all the signs that I have performed in their midst? I will smite them with the plague and annihilate them, and I shall make you, Moshe, a greater and more powerful nation than they. How many people were aware of the fact that Hashem wanted to destroy the Jewish nation after the incident with the spies? Now, this might remind you of a similar response after the sin of the golden calf. Mm-hmm. Now, in both cases, the defending attorney, Moshe Rabbeinu, came forward and argued on their defense. Now, listen to the very interesting defense that he makes. Moshe said to Hashem, verse 13, but then Egypt, from whose midst you brought up this nation with your power, and they will say about the inhabitants of this land, that means the land of Israel, they have heard that you, Hashem, are in the midst of this people, that you, Hashem, appeared eye to eye, and your cloud stands over them, and that in a pillar of cloud you go before them by day, and in a pillar of fire at night, yet you killed this people like a single man. Then the nations that heard of your fame will say, because Hashem lacked the ability to bring this people to the land that he had sworn to give them. He slaughtered them in the wilderness. Okay, let's think it over and repeat it. Moshe says, if you kill the Jewish people, I'm not going to tell you that they don't deserve it. Maybe they do deserve. Probably they do. They must have, if that's what you're thinking. But what's going to happen if you do that? What will the Egyptians say? He adds many details. the Egyptians will say that you, Hashem, who appeared eye to eye, your cloud stands over them in the day and in the night. Why is that relevant, that information? Doesn't seem to really follow the train of thought. What he really means to say is the Egyptians will think that you, God, killed them, which he would have. They'll say, why did Hashem kill them? They're going to say, because he lacked the ability to bring them into the land. And so he slaughtered them in the wilderness. Now, we really have to understand what Moshe's proof is, because you're just telling me, Moshe, how Hashem took them out of Egypt, which is a great feat. Why do you think the Egyptians are going to think that Hashem can't defeat the nations of Canaan if he defeated the Egyptians themselves? Why are they going to say that Hashem lacks the ability if they saw then Egypt, from whose midst you brought up this nation with your power? If those nations know that you have great power and you brought them out of their midst, why would they think that you lack the power to bring them into the land? Moshe's argument seems to be almost undermined by his own words. Doesn't really make a lot of sense. So let me share with you an explanation of this argument that's presented by Moshe from a sefer called Zerah Shimshon, which I quoted once before on the Parsha. It's written 300 years ago, but its words are still new. I just want to inform you that the Ramban, Nachmanides, says he can't understand that Moshe could think that anybody could draw such a conclusion about Hashem. He says it is a machshava shetuyet. It is a foolish, ignorant thought to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu couldn't do something, or that people will think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu couldn't do something like this. So let's fill in the gaps a little bit on the conversation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, why would they think that I'm powerless? I took them out of Mitzrayim myself. And Moshe says back, yes, but you took them out with your power. Now, your power here means you muscled your way. And this is how the Zerah Shimshon explains it. You took them out before the decree. The decree was that they were supposed to be in Egypt for 400 years. You took them out too early. And you want to bring them into the land too early also. If you took them out 190 years early, that means you want to kick out the Canaanites 190 years early too. Well, they might have a complaint against you, and they might say, nothing doing. You want to take the Jewish people out of the land of Egypt because they're suffering? Okay, fine. Let them sit in the desert for a while. We've got our life, and perhaps the Egyptians are going to think that Hashem had to kill them because he couldn't bring them into the land of Canaan. That's what they're going to think. And the reason is because when Hashem makes a decree, he can't break it. And furthermore, Hashem operates through a heavenly court based in Shalmala. Hashem has created this court, and the court has to agree. And Hashem may be powerless to override the court. This is all what people could say. And Hashem says, I can't override the court. Who do you think empowered the court? So listen to this argument, Moshe says. This is all the extra, you know, the in between the lines in the court proceedings. There's a word here that says, Mi bilti yecholes Hashem, because Hashem lacked the ability, in verse 16, and the word is yecholes with a Hebrew letter tuf at the end, which actually the Midrash says that that is a feminine sounding word. It should be yachol, not yecholet. And the Midrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu came forth and said, the Egyptians will think that you're weak like a female. Okay, that's why he uses the word yecholes. And the Zerah Shimshon says, what? Weak like a female? Why does it express it that way? Just say weak. Said Zerah Shimshon, it's an allusion to the female judge, Devorah. Who was Devorah? Devorah was one of the judges. There's a book in the Tanakh called the Shoftim, the Judges. And Devorah was a judge. So the Talmud discusses her eligibility as a judge and says a woman's not allowed to be a judge. So the Talmud says, okay, so she wasn't a judge, but she taught the judges. She was very, very well versed in the law. She was very wise. She taught the judges and she ordained the judges. But she herself can't judge. So says Moshe, that's what the Egyptians are going to say about you, God. You empowered the court, but you can't override the court that you empowered. And when they see that the Jews came out of Egypt so early, much earlier than the decree, and they died in the desert, they're going to say, aha, Hashem cannot override the court. He made a decree that the Canaanites will remain in the land until the end of the 400 years, and you can't do anything about it now. So then Hashem says to Moshe, aha, but remember, I did something at the sea. What did I do at the sea? I allowed the Jews to pass through, and the Egyptians drowned. Now, do you know, Moshe, that before I did that, the angels tried to override me? You may have heard that the angel said, why should the Egyptians drown and not the Jews? The Egyptians serve idols, the Jews serve idols. So all the angels tried to override me. And at that time, the Beis Din Shalmala, the heavenly court, tried to override me. But they couldn't. I held my ground, so to speak, and I overrode my court. And so you see, nobody could say that I cannot override my court. I did it at the sea. Maybe I didn't do it in Egypt, but I did it at the sea. So then Moshe comes back and says, and this is quoted in Rashi this time, you overrode the court with respect to one nation. And also remember, we've mentioned this before, I think, Ramchal, Rabbi Lusato mentions it, that Hashem, not only does he have a heavenly court, but he also has assigned an archangel for every nation. And he empowers the archangel also. And so he had to override the court, and he had to override one archangel, the angel of Egypt. But now, if you go into the land of Canaan, you're going to be conquering the land from how many nations? You said seven, you said 31. That's a big... Yes, seven main nations, but 31 all told. It says in the book of Joshua that there were 31 kings that had to be conquered. Now, Hashem, the Egyptians could say, you're not able to override 31 ambassadors. And that's what the Egyptians are going to say. So you really can't annihilate the Jews. And at that point, Hashem stopped. And he said, okay, I won't destroy them. We'll see at the end of the conversation what he said. What's going on? Is this like a game? What we're talking about over here, and what is being challenged here, and what is being established here, is the notion of Kiddush Hashem, of sanctification of God in the world. It's very, very important for people to understand who Hashem is. And unless it is absolutely clear, unless it has been demonstrated, people can limit the power of Hashem in their own perception. And perception is reality. And if there is a chance that people, I mean, they can see the most incredible miracles, they can have beheld the most extreme of all supernatural occurrences, where the sea is split and where plagues come about. But if they can say, all right, but he can't do X or he can't do Y, he can overpower one nation, but he can't overpower 31, that is a diminution of the perception of God's might and ultimately God's glory. That is what is at risk over here.
Reminds me of God's conversation with Job. He does the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
Very good analogy. So that's one thing. Let's continue on with the story, and then we'll kind of sum it back up again. The next line in the conversation is verse 17. V'yato yigdalna koach Hashem kasher dibarta lemor. And now, May the strength of my Lord be magnified as you have spoken. Moshe Rabbeinu says, now let me declare the greatness of God. And then he goes on to recite the attributes of mercy, which is also not the first time. This was also uttered by Moshe after the sin of the golden calf. However, we'll notice, and we'll discuss this shortly, that this list is a lot shorter than the list over there. You know, the list of 13 attributes we say when you take out the Torah on Yom Tov. Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum v'Chanun, Erech Apayim v'Rav Chesed v'Yemes, Notzer Chesed lo Alofim, Nosei Avon v'Fesha v'Chato v'Nakei. Okay, did anybody time me? How long, how many seconds did that take? 12 seconds?
Yeah, maybe more.
Hashem, Erech Apayim v'Rav Chesed, Nosei Avon v'Fasha v'Nakei. Only 6 seconds. So, out of the 13 attributes, he only mentioned 6 of them. Okay, we'll talk about that soon. But what is the context of this declaration? V'ata, Yigdal na koach Hashem kasher dibarta lemor. And now, may the strength of my Lord be magnified as you have spoken. So, let me share with you an explanation of this argument that's presented by Moshe from a sefer called Zera Shimshon, which I quoted once before on the Parsha. It's written 300 years ago, but its words are still new. I just want to inform you that the Ramban, Nachmanides, says he can't understand that Moshe could think that anybody could draw such a conclusion about Hashem. He says it is a machshava shetuyet. It is a foolish, ignorant thought to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu couldn't do something, or that people will think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu couldn't do something like this. So let's fill in the gaps a little bit on the conversation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, why would they think that I'm powerless? I took them out of Mitzrayim myself. And Moshe says back, yes, but you took them out with your power. Now, your power here means you muscled your way. And this is how the Zera Shimshon explains it. You took them out before the decree. The decree was that they were supposed to be in Egypt for 400 years. You took them out too early. And you want to bring them into the land too early also. If you took them out 190 years early, that means you want to kick out the Canaanites 190 years early too. Well, they might have a complaint against you, and they might say, nothing doing. You want to take the Jewish people out of the land of Egypt because they're suffering? Okay, fine. Let them sit in the desert for a while. We've got our life, and perhaps the Egyptians are going to think that Hashem had to kill them because he couldn't bring them into the land of Canaan. That's what they're going to think. And the reason is because when Hashem makes a decree, he can't break it. And furthermore, Hashem operates through a heavenly court based in Shalmala. Hashem has created this court. And the court has to agree. And Hashem may be powerless to override the court. This is all what people could say. And Hashem says, I can't override the court. Who do you think empowered the court? So listen to this argument, Moshe says. This is all the extra, you know, the in between the lines in the court proceedings. There's a word here that says, Mi bilti yecholes Hashem, because Hashem lacked the ability, in verse 16. And the word is yecholes with a Hebrew letter tuf at the end, which actually the Midrash says that is a feminine sounding word. It should be yachol, not yacholet. And the Midrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu came forth and said, the Egyptians will think that you're weak like a female. Okay, that's why he uses the word yacholes. And the Zera Shimshon says, what? Weak like a female? Why does it express it that way? Just say weak. Said Zera Shimshon, it's an allusion to the female judge, Devorah. Who was Devorah? Devorah was one of the judges. There's a book in the Tanakh called the Shoftim, the judges. And Devorah was a judge. So the Talmud discusses her eligibility as a judge and says a woman's not allowed to be a judge. So the Talmud says, okay, so she wasn't a judge, but she taught the judges. She was very, very well versed in the law. She was very wise. She taught the judges and she ordained the judges. But she herself can't judge. So says Moshe, that's what the Egyptians are going to say about you, God. You empowered the court, but you can't override the court that you empowered. And when they see that the Jews came out of Egypt so early, much earlier than the decree, and they died in the desert, they're going to say, aha, Hashem cannot override the court. He made a decree that the Canaanites will remain in the land until the end of the 400 years, and you can't do anything about it now. So then Hashem says to Moshe, aha, but remember, I did something at the sea. What did I do at the sea? I allowed the Jews to pass through, and the Egyptians drowned. Now, do you know, Moshe, that before I did that, the angels tried to override me? You may have heard that the angel said, why should the Egyptians drown and not the Jews? The Egyptians serve idols, the Jews serve idols. So all the angels tried to override me. And at that time, the Beis Din Shalmala, the heavenly court, tried to override me. But they couldn't. I held my ground, so to speak, and I overrode my court. And so you see, nobody could say that I cannot override my court. I did it at the sea. Maybe I didn't do it in Egypt, but I did it at the sea. So then Moshe comes back and says, and this is quoted in Rashi this time, you overrode the court with respect to one nation. And also remember, we've mentioned this before, I think, Ramchal, Rabbi Lutzato mentions it, that Hashem, not only does he have a heavenly court, but he also has assigned an archangel for every nation. And he empowers the archangel also. And so he had to override the court, and he had to override one archangel, the angel of Egypt. But now, if you go into the land of Canaan, you're going to be conquering the land from how many nations? You said 7, you said 31. That's a big... Yes, 7 main nations, but 31 all told. It says in the book of Joshua that there were 31 kings that had to be conquered. Now, Hashem, the Egyptians could say, you're not able to override 31 ambassadors. And that's what the Egyptians are going to say. So you really can't annihilate the Jews. And at that point, Hashem stopped. And he said, okay, I won't destroy them. We'll see at the end of the conversation what he said. What's going on? Is this like a game? What we're talking about over here, and what is being challenged here, and what is being established here, is the notion of Kiddush Hashem, of sanctification of God in the world. It's very, very important for people to understand who Hashem is. And unless it is absolutely clear, unless it has been demonstrated, people can limit the power of Hashem in their own perception. And perception is reality. And if there is a chance that people, I mean, they can see the most incredible miracles, they can have beheld the most extreme of all supernatural occurrences, where the sea is split and where plagues come about. But if they can say, all right, but he can't do X or he can't do Y. He can overpower one nation, but he can't overpower 31. That is a diminution of the perception of God's might and ultimately God's glory. That is what is at risk over here.
Reminds me of God's conversation with Job. He does the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
Very good analogy. So that's one thing. Let's continue on with the story, and then we'll kind of sum it back up again. The next line in the conversation is verse 17. V'yato yigdalna koach Hashem kasher dibarta lemor. And now, may the strength of my Lord be magnified as you have spoken. Moshe Rabbeinu says, now let me declare the greatness of God. And then he goes on to recite the attributes of mercy, which is also not the first time. This was also uttered by Moshe after the sin of the golden calf. However, we'll notice, and we'll discuss this shortly, that this list is a lot shorter than the list over there. You know, the list of 13 attributes, we say, when you take out the Torah on Yom Tov, Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum V'Chanun, Erech Apayim V'Rav Chesed V'Yemes, No Ter Chesed Lo Alofim, No Seyavon V'Fesha V'Chato V'Nakei. Okay, did anybody time me? How many seconds did that take? 12 seconds?
Yeah, more.
Hashem, Erech Apayim V'Rav Chesed, No Seyavon V'Fasha V'Nakei. Only 6 seconds. So, out of the 13 attributes, he only mentioned 6 of them. Okay, we'll talk about that soon. But what is the context of this declaration? V'ata yigdal na koach Hashem kasher dibarta lemor. And now, may the strength of my Lord be magnified as you have spoken. See, we need another story. This story is taught in the Talmud Tractate Shabbos, page 89. When Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the mountain to receive the Torah, he observed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was tying crowns onto the letters of the Torah. He said, Moshe, I'll be right with you. I just have a few more crowns to tie. So Hashem is busy working. Omar lo. Then he sees Moshe approach. He says, Moshe. Moshe was quiet. He just approached and he was standing there. Moshe, ain shalom bi'ircha? Where you come from? Don't people say shalom? In other words, you're just going to stand there quietly? You're not going to say hello? Omar lefanov, Moshe said back, klum yesh eved shenosein shalom l'rabo? Does a servant initiate a greeting to his master? Omar le, haya l'chol yazreini, Hashem says to him, well, you should have helped me. And Rashi explains, you should have said, be successful in your work. So he says, okay, so you don't want to say hello. At least tell me to be successful in my work. It's hard work tying on these crowns. Miyad omar lo, and immediately Moshe Rabbeinu said, quote, Yigdal na koach Hashem kasher dibarta lemor. And now may the strength of my Lord be magnified as you have spoken. What in the world does the receiving of the Torah on Mount Sinai have to do with the spies? And why is it the same words that Moshe says after the spies that he said when he saw Hashem tying on the crowns? What is this formula? And now, may the strength of my Lord be magnified as you have spoken. What's going on here? And what kind of a conversation is this anyway? So this is explained by Rav Dessler, Michtav Me'Eliyahu. He says that what's really happening is the following. The crowns of the Torah represent the highest achievement, the highest understanding and study of Torah. Shlemos, completeness of Torah. Moshe is watching Hashem doing this, and he's saying, well, obviously the Torah is way, way beyond the human grasp, and only Hashem can do such a thing. I'm just going to stand here quietly because I have no connection to this. As we say in yeshiva, I have no shaychus, no connection. And Moshe turns around, and Hashem sees Moshe, and he says, there's no shalom in your city, which means human beings can't also achieve shlemus, completeness. Human beings, the Jewish people, cannot receive the highest level of Torah. And Moshe says, but I'm a servant and you're the master, which means the only possible way that we could is if you give it to us as a gift. But we have nothing on our own. We have no innate ability to reach that high on our own. It's all a gift from you, God. And Hashem says, oh, really? It's almost all a gift from me. But I can't do the work of bestowing completeness on you unless you say, be successful in your work, God. What does that mean? So So Rav Dessler says, that means is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can only bestow and reveal His presence, His knowledge, His awareness, His revelation upon the Jewish people only if they say, we want it. As Rav Dessler says, quote, Ha'adam tzarich la'achin et atzmo lekabel hashlemus. A person or people need to prepare themselves to receive this completeness. V'hainu al yedei sheyishtokek eleha. And they prepare themselves by yearning for it. V'yispalel el misha yecholes biyado litnalo. And praying and asking and beseeching God, the one who truly does have the power, to give it to him. Or to give it to us. Ki ein gavul v'kitzvah l'rachamah. There is no limit to His mercy and to His abilities. Hashem is saying to Moshe Rabbeinu here, and this is really the context behind this phrase, Yigdal na koach Hashem, that I have this great power, I have this great ability to reveal, but I can't do it without you. I need you to open yourself up and to be the receptacle for my revelation. If you don't do it, I can't give it. It's almost all up to me, but it's really all up to you. When Moshe Rabbeinu heard that, he said, I will therefore open myself up and I will ask for it. Yigdal na koach Hashem. This is his prayer. May the strength of my Lord be magnified. And then he starts praying using the attributes. In other words, this conversation has evolved. Hashem said first, I'm going to destroy the people. Moshe says, you can't. What about Kiddush Hashem? What about the glory of your name? People are not going to fully comprehend the extent of your greatness. And Hashem said to Moshe, oh, in other words, you want me to reveal my greatness to the world. Okay, then you have to be the catalyst. You have to be the one to proclaim it. You have to be the one to ask for it. And if you don't ask for it, Moshe Rabbeinu, no one's going to ask for it, and then I can't be there. I cannot give you, I cannot reveal myself unless there is a receptacle. We'll come back to that again. So why the missing words? Why the missing attributes? So here I found in the Sefer the Chumash Khalil Tiferes, which was our source about 4 or 5 years ago. And he says that there are a couple of these attributes that he did not mention because he didn't think that they would be timely, given the situation of this tremendous breach of faith by the Jewish people. In the first instance, it's Hashem Hashem. Those are the two attributes, mercy and justice. He didn't want to mention the justice one now. He thought that if Hashem would use His attribute of justice, we'd lose. Keil Rachum V'Chanun, he didn't mention. The all-powerful God who is compassionate and merciful. And these are attributes which are fitting to a people when they have majority of merits, but now they had the majority of demerits, and therefore he could not invoke those. Erech Apayim, slow to anger, that he invoked. Barav Chesed, and abundant in kindness, that he invoked. The Emes, and truth, that he didn't invoke. Because if you look at it through truth, they don't get another chance. Noter chesed lalafim. He preserves the kindness of the patriarchs for thousands of generations. He didn't want to mention that either, because the whole merit of the patriarchs was that they wanted to come to the land of Israel. And here the Jewish people scorned it. Nosei avon vafesha. He bears iniquity and sin. Yes, he mentioned that one. But not the chata'a, because chata'a is unintentional. But they were intentional. And vinakei, and he cleans, that he did mention. In the final, after Moshe Rabbeinu learned his lesson, that true Kiddush Hashem, true, that is the goal. But true Kiddush Hashem starts with you, starts with us. Then Hashem said, Vayomer Hashem in verse 20, Salachti chidvarecha, I have forgiven as you have spoken. Because if you, Moshe, realize that you hold the key, you hold the on switch for me to reveal myself to Israel and to the nations, then I'm ready to forgive. So that's how you learn Chumash. According to our commentators, you're not going to see it in the words, but what's going on over here is that Moshe and Hashem are talking about the most important concepts, the most important ideas of the world. But to sum it up, the world truly is unsure about all of this. We in this room, we in our heart of hearts, are really unsure about this ourselves. We're just like those Egyptians that Moshe Rabbeinu is afraid what they're going to say. How much power does Hashem really have? Does he have power to override what strong nations think? Is he stronger than Arabs? Is he stronger than terrorists? Is he stronger than the United Nations? Just how strong is God? Well, yes, we know that God created the world, but is he still in control of the world, or is he like Devorah, who empowers the judges but then can't judge herself? We're not sure. And we're also not sure about what the overall goal is here in the world. What's it all about? You know, most people, if they'd be in Moshe Rabbeinu's position, and they said, hey, Moshe, I'll save you and I'll make you a great nation. The other people, we don't really need. I'm not going to second guess, but how many people would be tempted to say, okay, you know, I really care mostly about my own well-being. Moshe Rabbeinu, and this is not the first time, has said to Hashem, if you do away with the Jewish people, I don't want to be here. Or, if your name is desecrated, I don't even want to be here. Life is not even worth living. It's all about you, Hashem. It's all about you being recognized and revealed in the world. That's what we're here for. As we learn in Pirkei Avos, Kol Ma Shebarasi, everything that I have created, L'chvodi, it was for my glory. Because that's what we're here for. We're here, as we've discussed many, many times, to recognize Hashem through the hiddenness. He has created us and he has hidden himself so that we can find him. And that's the most important thing that we're not sure of. We're not sure of how much power we have. We sit back and we wait for Hashem to reveal himself. We're waiting. We're waiting for Mashiach. How long are we going to have to wait? And Hashem is saying to Moshe, you have to say, be successful, Hashem. You have to start, which Rav Dessler translates as means, you have to yearn for the day that Hashem will reveal himself. You have to pray for it. You have to pray for Hashem, who has unlimited power, to let himself be known. We're unsure of our own power. And that's what we learn from this episode. We learn from this episode that Hashem's power is limitless. There is truly nothing that he does not control. There is no limitation. Even in the greatest powers that he himself created, there is no limitation. Hashem does not make any stones that he can't pick up. And we have to learn that we have the on switch. And that we're not expected to reveal it. We're not expected to reach high levels of shlemos, of completeness, as Hashem said to Moshe on the mountain. You don't have to reach those levels of the Torah, but you just have to say to me, be successful. You have to yearn for it, and then I will give it to you as a gift. So we learn some very, very important things from this conversation, just how powerful Hashem is, and just how powerful our role is in revealing that. Yes.
I had the impression, maybe wrongly, that Moses was begging God not to annihilate the people because God would sort of lose credibility because the Jewish people were supposed to be chosen, and so therefore if you killed them, their chosenness would sort of be negated. Isn't that true? Because you didn't really allude to that at any point. You were talking about the fact that the Canaanites would have to be defeated, and of course I could defeat them, but I thought this was really about the chosenness, as it were, of the Jewish people.
It's true. It's true what you're saying. What is the purpose of the chosenness of the Jewish people? What is the end result of that?
To validate God.
Correct.
Because God is not validated anymore if they disappear.
That's right. So it's really all this, it's all connected.
Why is the Shem?
You see that?
No.
If the Jewish people are destroyed, then the chosen people are lost. If the chosen people are lost, there's no one that's going to seek God to be revealed.
Oh, okay.
And therefore God will not be revealed.
Right.
Yeah.
God could change that too, though. I
God can't change our hearts. Well, I shouldn't say he can't. He doesn't want to. That's the one thing that he empowered us with. That's the one thing he empowered us with is Yiras Shamayim. Like it says in the Talmud, everything is in the hands of heaven except the fear of heaven.
But he's willing to start over.
With Moshe.
Well, the truth is, I think that he's saying, he's threatening. And he's really giving, this is borne out in the Talmud on the incident of the golden calf. There's a phrase over there where he says to Moshe, leave me and I will destroy them. So the Talmud says, why does he say leave me? Leave me alone. What he's trying to hint to Moshe is, Moshe, you can do something about it. I want to egg you on. That's what he's looking for. He's looking for Moshe to stand up and become the advocate.
I wonder why Moshe didn't invoke the episode with Noah. When God made a promise never again to annihilate
with water.
He never said that he would never annihilate. He said he wouldn't do it with a flood. Yasher Koach, and have a wonderful Shabbat.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.